Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Infinite complacence. People went to and fro the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
So you've heard me mention him before, and it's worth it once again. Jim Harold's Campfire should be the next podcast in your rotation. And you're here because you enjoy personal encounter stories. Well, Jim will have you covered, just like ITF. Some of his most recent episodes include discussions of a haunted piano, strange premonitions, skinwalkers, an odd flying creature, and more. Jim's shows have been downloaded over 60 million times, and the campfire itself is in its 13th year. So, do me a favor and follow Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to Into the Fray. And before we get to this week's episode, new patrons over at Patreon.com include Zach Lord, Jason Winstead, Aaron, Samantha O'Keefe, Denise Kelsey, Ty, Barb, Shanna, Cheryl Graham, Casey Langille, and Michaela Simpson. Alpha shoutouts, these are people pledging $20 or more a month over at patreon.com/intothefray. Nick Walker, Denise Kelsey, Sandra Sandgren, Matt Schultz, Brian McCahey, Brad Ward, Mike Archer, Chris Guerrero, Patrick Ray, David Otto, Matthew Lacewell, Ted Cheever, Jake Dressel, Heather Stockwell, William Cornell II, Roy Daniel, Randy, Tyler DeMoney, Sticky Sound Scene, Karina, Eric Ribich, Josh Arthur, Andrew of Black Triangle Coffee, Maynard W., and Azriel. And some of the latest Patreon-only episodes include 3 live video chats with patrons, myself, and John Paul Capice. They include Halloween in Rhode Island and edition 1 and 2 of Demons and Darkness, which pretty much turned into an Ask Me Anything with John Paul Capice. And happening tonight, if you're listening to this latest episode on Thursday, the 17th of November, the patrons and I are executing a live video chat with Florida skunk ape researcher David Sidoti. It has been 5 long years since I've talked to David, and there has been many developments down in the state of Florida, so I'm looking forward to catching up with him. So if you're interested in supporting a show you love, be that maybe Into the Fray, and getting extra content for yourself to include bonus audio and video episodes, signed books, stickers, Discord room, yada, 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 head to patreon.com/intothefray. The most popular level is the $5 a month, and that will get you access to all of the extra bonus audio and video content and even the active Discord room. So there you go. And without further ado, let's get to this week's episode.
I've been on a search for answers, and as you know, the more things you learn, the more questions you have.
So what got you into this? Were you, have you always been into the paranormal and cryptids and UFOs prior to, I mean, let's kind of intro a little bit that today we're going to be talking about a very strange cave that you came across, and you're in the state of Kentucky.
Yes. I live in Kentucky in the Appalachian Mountains, which are the oldest mountains in the world. And I live on top of a mountain. And in the valley is a creek, and that creek is part of the Warrior's Path, which is a Native American trail that goes from Florida all the way up to Michigan. And this cave is an offshoot of that creek. It's supposed to be where Daniel Boone camped when he was exploring Kentucky. So that's where a lot of these experiences have taken place. So my first experience, I was just a little kid. I was about 5 years old. I lived in Lexington, Kentucky. And this would have been in 1969. I would wake up in the middle of the night, and at my window, there would be a little gray, and it would talk to me, take me out of my room. I don't remember anything that happened after I was taken more than once. A lot of the times I would wake up in the front yard in the middle of the night, and one of my neighbor friends, she would be there with me, would be in our pajamas standing out in the yard like, how did we get here? No memory of what happened. We just ended up there together in the front yard or in her yard. So, you know, I'd make my way back inside, and I would scared to death, and I would try to tell my parents about it. And my dad would just say I was having nightmares. And, you know, I never wanted to sleep in my room. And they came quite a bit, and I would try to resist, but I never could. So that was my first experience with anything paranormal.
And did you have any physical marks after these visitors would come?
Well, I don't know. I was so young at the time. Back then, I was marked up all the time, playing outside from daylight
right
after dark.
That is very true. At five, you would be doing that. So looking back on it, why do you think it was you and your neighbor that were taken and then returned at the same time?
Well, I don't know about my neighbor. I wish I knew how to get in touch with her, because we moved a couple of years after this started happening. You know, I've always been thinking, why was I abducted? The only thing I can think, and this is after years of experiences and thought and research, I've always been a spiritual person. I've always, like, I was studying Buddhism and Taoism by the time I was 8 years old. I've always a musical person. About the same time these abductions started happening, I started playing music. My neighbor had a drum set, so we had a deal. I would do his paper out for him, and then after school, I would be able to play his drums. So, you know, I never really thought about it until we moved, and then my next experience happened. We were in Cub Scouts, camping on the Kentucky River. And in the middle of the night, I woke up and got out of, and there was a lot of other kids outside their tents all looking up. So I looked up too, and there was this probably a 30 to 60 foot round disc. I sent you a drawing that I drew of it. And it was landing, and before it came to the ground, like about 20 feet above the ground, it released this white mist that just covered us all, like you'd see a fog machine at a concert or something. Just covered us completely, and that was the last thing any of us remembered until the next day we woke up and we started talking about it, you know, asking each other, do you remember what happened? Yeah, I remember this and this. And I still had no idea what was happening to me. I didn't know anything about UFOs. It wasn't until a couple of years later when the movie Club of the Third Kind came out, and I went to the theater to see it, and my mind was blown. All these memories and realizations. Just, okay, that's what's been happening. That's who those little guys were. You know, that's when I started to, you know, put two and two together.
Now, Glenn, when you moved from the first house where they were taking you to the second one, did all of that immediately stop then?
Yes, it did. At least I have no memory of anything happening, you know, until the camp out with the Cub Scouts.
And did you guys have any, I mean, missing time associated with that? Maybe you wouldn't even remember. Do you feel like you or any of the other fellow Cub Scouts were taken that night?
I think all of us that walked out and got covered in the mist were taken. And that was the last thing I remember until the next morning. So it could have been all night, you know, it could have been a little while, I don't know. So definitely that whole night is missing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a professional musician and I'm a guy that people hire to play on their record or to go on tour. I can play any style of music, and I have this phonographic memory. Every song I hear, I can remember it immediately, and every song I've ever played or every song I've even just ever heard, I could sit down and play. So that helped me out in this business where somebody might need somebody to go on tour in a week, but they got, you know, 3 hours of music to learn. So I was always working and traveled all over the world, lived in Hollywood, the music scene there in the 80s, scene in Memphis in the 90s.
Bet you were at some really good parties.
Oh, yeah, I have some stories.
I bet you do. That's really impressive, though. I mean, so with a three-hour window, you could memorize and be able to play an entire album?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Even less for just an album.
Wow.
You know? Like I could just listen to it one time and then I would know it. It took me all over the world being able to do that. 38 years, I just traveled all over, played with lots and lots of bands and lots of musicians and songwriters. Lived in the Caribbean on an island for a while and played down there. Whenever I would get off the road or finish a big project and need a break, I would come back to Kentucky. And I have a farm here. It's 40 acres up in the mountains. I would do just like solo camping for a week or so, just bushcraft kind of survival type stuff, just to see if I could do it and to connect with nature. So I had been going to this cave ever since high school. It belonged to a good friend of mine who's also a musician. And it's about from here on like a 500 acre property. So I would go, well, I should preface this. All through my life, I've been a seeker. And because of these experiences, I've studied all the world religions, alive and dead. I'm an ordained minister. I'm an archaeologist. I'm a historian. I've worked with universities and state archaeologists and just a seeker. So in my process of trying to learn the answers to everything in the world, studying religions, I ran across shamanism. And being a drummer, I recognized some of these shamans were experiencing as far as like playing a prolonged rhythm at a certain tempo. Sometimes I would feel like I was going to leave my body, just float off the drum set, or my heart rate would, I wore a heart monitor once and it would go from like 33 beats a minute to 168 beats a minute. So I started noticing these physiological changes, started studying shamanism more. And then actually in my travels, I ran across a drum from a Navajo shaman that I got. And so I would drum and I also was studying a lot of pranayama yoga, different types of meditation. So I would go to this cave like once a month on a full moon, and I would camp, build a fire, like when I would first get there, I would need firewood. So I would pick up dead wood and I would smash it across trees, you know, crack, crack, and break all this wood up and then throw it down into the cave, because you can walk down in through the roof. And there's a creek that runs through it out into a great big turquoise pool with cliffs around it. So I'd get my wood down there and I'd build my fire and I would play drums and meditate, do this every full moon. And after about the 8th or 9th month, I guess, of doing this, or maybe even a year, it was in September, and I went down there to camp. That was the night I had my first Bigfoot experience.
So you say there's water close to there. How much water are we talking about?
Well, the cave is about 1.5 miles long, and this creek runs all the way through it, comes out into a big pool, and then runs into the much larger main creek. There's tons of water, so many springs, and you know, it's just a lot of water in this area.
So the cave is 1.5 miles long. Have you been all the way through it? And I'm assuming, since this is on private property, this is not a place where people just go traipsing through. Like, you have to be invited onto the property, I'm assuming.
Exactly, yes, you do. Because it is private property, and I'm a friend of the family and have been for years, and it's a family of musicians, and we've all played music together over the years. You have to be invited, and you have to sign a release. It's really private. The reason why they do that is, at one time, I think it was Boy Scouts were there on a field trip, and a couple of them drowned.
Mm.
The pool that they got into, one part of it is pretty much bottomless, and it goes way down deep into another underground system, over 100 feet deep.
So you're not probably messing with that part of it, right? I mean, do you go rappelling and get helmets out and things like that and go that deep into that cave?
Well, the cave you can actually walk through the cave all the way through it. And only one time you have to get down on your stomach and slide about 6 feet to get through it. Or you don't even have to do that. You could just walk right through the creek.
That's okay.
So yeah, it's easy to get through. There's lots of offshoots to the sides, passages. And like I said, I've been going there since high school, so we have explored a few of those offshoots. But yeah, it's a magical place. Like most of my, what you would call, experiences as an adult have taken place at this cave. It's just a magical spot.
Oh yeah, let's hear about that first Bigfoot experience.
Okay. So I've been coming there for months and unwittingly doing tree knocks by breaking firewood. You know, I didn't know what Bigfoot was even on my radar. You know, I had seen The Legend of Boggy Creek as a kid when it came out in the theater, and it scared me to death, but I hadn't thought about it since. I thought, well, that's in Missouri or whatever. So I've been cave drumming probably a couple of hours, cooked some food, and came back out of the cave. Walked up through the ceiling and came out, which is where the cliffs are that surround that big pool. And I was standing there just looking at the forest, admiring how the moonlight had just lit up silvery, just beautiful. I could see so good. And I was just standing there maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 minutes. And then right behind me, I heard and felt a really low growl. Like, I could feel it all through me. It was just like a, and I turned around, and 3 feet away from me, backlit by the moon, was an 8-foot tall Sasquatch. And the moon was like right behind its head, whole outline, and hear it breathing. And I mean, it could have reached out. I could have reached out and touched it if I'd wanted to. I just froze, and I was looking at its chest. So I looked up at its face, like where its face would be at its, and you know, like I said, the moon was directly behind it, so it was backlit. And then this thought came in my head: well, you know, maybe I shouldn't be looking at him in the eyes. You know, this is a apex predator. This is a monster. So I immediately looked down at the ground, and as I was looking down, I saw how big he was, and I could still hear him breathing. Then I had this thought in my head. I just thought to, like, in my head, but I was talking to him, kind of, you know, like I was going, in my head, I'm going, okay, dude, I'm not a threat. I'm just going to ease my way back down into the cave and go about my business. And that's what I did. I just kind of sidestepped with him still in front of me about 10 steps to where I got to where I could walk down into the cave. And I set fire the rest of the night, keeping the fire going bright and just looking at both openings, the ceiling and where the water goes out, just to make sure he didn't come back. And he didn't. That was it for that night. And that was the last night that I camped at that cave.
I would imagine so. 3 feet away is no joke.
Yeah. It still scares me just trying to talk about it. It's...
So, I mean, 8 feet tall, you're, I mean, somewhere around even with his chest. Because you would have had to look up at his face.
I'm 6'1". Yeah, I had to look up. And he was probably three feet wide. Mm. Yeah.
And you didn't have any inkling that he was there. Like, you didn't hear any knocks or calls or grunts or anything prior to him just being there.
No, not at all. No sound whatsoever. I mean, I was making a lot of noise down there in the cave, drumming and stuff, and had the fire going. But no, and I didn't even hear him come up behind me because leaves were down and crunchy, and he snuck right up on me.
Yeah, we hear that a lot, right? Something that big having the ability to move around in such a completely, not just stealthy, but silent way just seems impossible.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'm shaking.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's quite easy to relive that, being that close to that thing. Are you a little relieved you weren't able to see his face?
Yeah, for sure. But you know, I didn't get any angry or aggressive, or I mean, because he could have killed me if he wanted to. I just got more the sense of, like, he was curious, like, what are you doing in my backyard, or what are you doing in my house? Kind of feeling is what I got. Curious.
Yeah, and like you said, you're drumming, you're cooking, you're lighting fires. I would imagine that's I've told people to do that kind of a thing, you know, if they want to possibly encounter a Bigfoot, maybe not that close, I have to say, yikes. But yeah, just, you know, play music, especially if you're a musical person. I was just talking recently to a friend of mine that, you know, he's going to an active property and he plays guitar. He said, well, take your guitar, man. I mean, you just never know what these things might be into. And they're very curious.
Yeah, I agree. My second encounter actually involved music too. On that same farm, we were just, cave is at the bottom of the property, and we were on the top of the mountain where the house is and the fields. And it's about a, I don't know, maybe a 10-minute four-wheeler ride to get back and forth. So up there at the top of the mountain, we had built a little stage. Warm summer nights, we'd get out there and play music together, cook some food, and, you know, we've known each other since high school, just have a good time. I had pitched a tent back in this apple orchard about 100 yards from the stage. So I walked back there and got in my tent and went to sleep. And sometime in, well, before I went to sleep, I noticed, I should say too, this is about 10 years after first experience at the cave. So 10 years later, I heard a lot of coyotes, like a whole pack of coyotes, which was unusual. In the time where since I had been back to Kentucky, I'd been out on the road and there wasn't any coyotes in Kentucky. And then I come back off the road and then I'm hearing a pack of coyotes. I just thought it was unusual. So I get in my tent and I go to sleep. And sometime in the middle of the night, I wake up to that same low growl, exactly the same, about a foot from where my head is, where I'm laying. And then there's the tent. And then there's this Bigfoot growling at me. It froze me. I just froze. And it stayed there for, I don't know, maybe 5 seconds. Breathed a couple times and then walked off. That was my second experience there.
And were any of your other friends that were there playing music, camping in that same little area as well?
No, it was just me camping. The guy, he went in his house. He lives there. Went in his house and was going to sleep in his nice, comfortable bed. And I was going to rough it in the apple orchard. I was by myself.
Did they ever have apples go missing a little bit higher in the trees than they should have been plucked out of?
I would say so. I don't know, but I know my farm here, I have apple trees, pear trees, persimmon trees, pawpaw trees, grapes, raspberries, strawberries, every kind of fruit that you can grow in Kentucky, I grow. This year, my pear, I see them. I'm just like, okay, tomorrow I'm going to come pick pears. They're ripe. And the very next day, every pear is gone off of three trees. My mom, who lives on the property too, she's like, well, I think the raccoons must have ate them. Like 100 raccoons?
Yeah, a whole gang of them. But there's none, I mean, ravaged through on the ground, right? I mean, which would probably be what raccoons
do. Not at
do.
All. Yeah. Everyone was missing. Like we couldn't even scavenge any, you know. And then my mom, I mentioned this, and she tells me, well, I was out here picking blackberries. This is a big patch of thornless blackberries about 25 feet from the forest edge. I was picking blackberries, and somebody threw a rock at me. I was like, well, I don't think it was a person that threw the rock.
Probably not after hearing these other experiences. You got fruit trees, blackberries, which, you know, if you start reading any of the 411 stuff, I mean, it's like you may not want to ever pick berries again, right? But, okay, so you've got Bigfoot stuff going on there. And I don't know if you had another Bigfoot encounter to share, but you've also got other activity and things that you've seen in these areas, right?
Yes, definitely. I've had quite a few experiences with extraterrestrials or interdimensional beings at that particular cave. Recently, the house where I live now came up for sale. It was on a piece of property that was connected. Somebody else owned it, and it came up for sale, so I bought it. That's where I live now. All the UFOs videos and pictures and orbs and stuff I've sent you, it's happening here at this house. So between where I live now and that cave, I've probably had, I don't know, 30 different what people would call paranormal experiences at that cave, at least. And then every clear night, there's a UFO, at least one, hovering over the forest here, a couple thousand feet off the ground. In the same general area. Every clear night I see it at dusk. We'll look out. It's so common that I look out the window. Yeah, it's there. All right, good night. You know, it's like we've got so much video. And I recently got a telescope, though, so I'm trying to work to record through the telescope. So that's my latest.
You want to see them waving at you from the cockpit, right? You're like, I want to see these dudes. I mean, not that you haven't already. So the interdimensional beings, because you kind of almost separated aliens and ETs from the interdimensional. Are those one and the same, or why do you classify the interdimensional as such, and what do those look like?
Well, I do kind of separate them, and I don't even know if that's, now that I think about it, maybe that's not accurate, because, well, I've had experience with obvious ETs, right, where I have actually been taken on a craft and gone through space and had these experiences. And then there's other times where it's almost like I leave my body and I port into other dimensions and interact with other beings at this cave. And I didn't realize what I was doing. I was just practicing my Kundalini yoga, my pranayama yoga, my shamanism, and going into this experience each time I camped with an open mind and actually seeking the other, you know, like I want to have an experience with God, cosmic consciousness, whatever, you know, it is. I always went in to the experience with that attitude. And then recently I found out just a year ago that there's something called the 5 protocols.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you about that, if you prescribe to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know anything about it until I saw a video with Dr. Stephen Greer. And then I was like, well, I've been doing that for years. Yeah, of course that works. I didn't know anybody else was doing it, or I just knew it was happening to me.
So you can call them in, essentially?
Yes. I don't anymore. Like, I'll communicate with the ones that are out here over my house telepathically. And there's a funny story about the last time that happened. I had the telescope out on my deck, and I looked through it, and it was just amazing. It's like this sphere, and it looked like it had electric energy swirling all around it, and it was changing colors. Then on top of that, there was a black circle in the middle of it that would swirl around it occasionally. And I was just, this is amazing. I'm looking through the telescope. So I come inside and I get Ann's iPhone and I go out, put it on the bracket that holds it. And this is the first time I've tried to use it. So it's kind of taken me a minute to get it on there. And then I look and they've flown off behind the trees. I'm like, darn. So I take the phone off and I just think in my head, that was so cool. If you guys would just fly out and let me see it again, just let me see you again. I promise I won't record. I just want to look at you. So here they come out of the trees and hovering there again. So I can look at them. I'm just amazed. Other people have to see this. You know, this is just so cool. So I break out the iPhone and I start putting it up there. Zip, behind the trees they go. They're like, nope, not tonight. So I put it away. But yeah, I've especially at the cave when I was actively, now this was back in the, I should have said maybe this was back in the early 90s when I had all these experiences at the cave as far as with extraterrestrials and interdimensional beings. Or the first one I had, I was there and I had a friend with me that would come occasionally. We had done our food and our drumming and I was meditating. He told me this later. He said I levitated off the ground about a foot or two, and then he said it was like I left my body. I just fell over, was asleep or something. And I take that back. That was the second experience. The first time he wasn't there. So the first time I was meditating and I come out of my meditation and I'm laying about 4 feet off the ground, which is weird because there, I had been sitting on a big flat rock, but now I'm elevated. And the only reason I knew I was elevated because when I opened my eyes, there was probably a 6 or 7 foot tall praying mantis looking being standing over me, and I could only see him from about his waist up. And then I looked directly, I couldn't move my body, but I could move my eyes. That was the only thing. I looked towards my feet, and there were three large grays standing against the cave wall, and they looked shocked, like surprised that I was awake, like I was not supposed to come out of whatever they had me under. And then I focused back on the praying mantis guy, and I could see his arms were down towards my chest doing something, but I couldn't get my eyes to look down to see what his hands were doing. So I just thought in my head, what are you doing to me? And then he answered me in my head and said, we're helping you to evolve. And then I thought back in my head, well, as long as it's positive, then go ahead. And then I was unconscious again. And then when I woke up, they were gone.
I've heard before that those insect-type beings, the insect-type aliens, if that's what we're going to call them, are not supposed to be very good ones to come in contact with.
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you. I've been trying to do research on praying mantis aliens, and there's not much out there. And I don't know anybody else that might know what's going on there.
Well, you know what's weird, Glenn, is that the lady that I mentioned that I just spoke to from Kentucky, and we were having all this, you know, electrical stuff going on and EVPs, which I don't even like EVPs. And I heard one live while we were recording. Anyway, in her attic, one of the many things she has going on in the attic of one of her homes, she pulled the stairs down, and there was essentially what you just described staring down at her, except she said it was kind of a mix of, she described it as a insectoid slash humanoid. It had the head, especially, of essentially a praying mantis, and it scared her to death. Rightfully so, right? Especially in your home or out in the middle of the woods by yourself. I can't imagine that's very nice either. But, you know, really when you step back, you're going, well, what does that mean, though, right? Because she's got haunting-type activity, very classic, like apparitions and shadows and things like this. But then she has this in her home, and you just mentioned this in relation to also seeing UFOs. So you kind of step back and go, what does that all mean?
Yeah, I wish I knew.
Yeah, me too. Because that it's beyond just, oh, that's just kind of weird. It's like, there's just pieces we're not putting together here, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's how I feel. Yeah. I go nuts with this stuff.
Me too. Just where those pieces of the puzzle are and how they fit in.
How much do you feel like, I mean, obviously you, starting at the age of 5, you were having experiences. Do you feel like that's what got you into kind of these alternate modalities and religions and, you know, things like you're executing shamanism and Kundalini and all these other things? Do you think you would be into that anyway, even without the, I mean, that's really hard to say, but you know what I'm saying? Like the chicken and the egg and all of that. What do you think the tie-in is there, or is there one? And you just think you would have been into it anyway?
I definitely think that these experiences starting out as a child put me on the path to wanting to know about all these religions, about first works, all these. It made me thirsty for knowledge. I think I would have been a different person for sure without. And it's made me so creative too, like just almost like a, I don't know. They used to say I was a child prodigy musician. At junior high, after school, I was going to University of Kentucky and taking art classes. And so it's always made me interested, I guess, and trying to find out what the answers are.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off My Rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin Marshall credit card bill.
Makes me wonder if you were attracted to the more dark side of things. You know, I mean, let's go full bore and say, what if you were like, I'm going to become a Satanist, or I'm going to be into dark witchcraft. And I know that not all Satanists are horrible people. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying, I mean, in general, it's a darker religion, right? So, right. You know, I do wonder how different your experiences would be or would have been if, you know, instead of doing meditation and kind of the more light and love side, I wonder how different the experiences would be. And that's just conjecture, of course. It's just something that popped into my head.
Well, it's funny because I actually dabbled into black magic, started studying it when I was a kid. You know, I was one of those kids where go to my classes and I would pretty much read my book the first day I got it, so I would know. And some of my teachers were cool, so they'd like, okay, well, you can take the test now for the year. And I would take it and pass it, so then I would have the rest of the year just to goof off, basically, in class time in the library. So I would spend 2 or 3 hours a day at the school library, and the only books about magic that I ran across were black magic and that type of thing, witches and Salem witch trials and that type of stuff. So I actually experimented with it a bit until one night in high school, I woke up and staring down at me over my bed, as big as my ceiling, was this demonic face just laughing and saying, "You're mine. You are mine." And it freaked me out so bad that I started praying. As soon as I started praying, it dissipated, and I felt like I couldn't move. But as soon as I started praying, it dissipated, and I could move again. And, you know, after that, I didn't actively look at, I mean, I've studied it, but I didn't actively try to do any black magic. Like, I studied Hermes, Trismegistus, and I've studied all the different magicians and magic styles in history, along with my religion. But I will say there was a period in the 80s out in Hollywood where I was seeing some really decadent stuff, crazy parties. You know, I kind of dipped my toe into some of that, found out really about karma. You know, how effective karma is. So it didn't take but just a couple of experiences there to make me want to not to, you know, to always focus on the positive, mm-hmm. always the love. And that's where I've been ever since.
I'd imagine that would about do it, right? You're like, okay, I get the hint here. Let's move on from that.
Yeah. Not my cup of tea.
So you also mentioned in one of the emails that you guys are actually between the 37th and 38th parallel. You want to describe that a little bit? And, you know, if people are not familiar with that aspect of things.
Yeah, so I guess it's been dubbed the paranormal highway between in this latitude. Between these latitudes, there's lots of what you would call paranormal activity as far as the whole gamut, as far as I can understand, everything from UFOs to ghosts to Sasquatch, Dogman. There was a Dogman killing just right across me, a few miles here. Yeah, and Kentucky is mostly karst limestone, so there's caves everywhere. You know, Mammoth Cave, the longest mapped cave system in the world, over 500 miles and still growing. The Beast of LBL. I think did you guys spend some time in Kentucky?
Yes, sure did. And I've actually been to Carter County for the purposes of Bigfoot several years ago myself. So yeah, very active in that area.
Yeah. And since I've decided I was going to start talking about sharing some of this with other people, I've talked to my some of my friends around here, and they've all have stories about UFOs, all of them, that I've asked about it. So yeah, there's a lot of activity going on here.
Do you think that you've been taken recently or as of late at all?
Man, I hope not. I didn't tell you. I sent you a picture of a couple of scars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this was after the mantis encounter. The next morning, I woke up and my leg on my left thigh had a big red bump on it, about the size of a dime, like a fresh wound. I didn't know how it happened, but it healed up. And then each time after I would come back from those trips to the cave, it would be, well, I should back up. After it healed up, I could feel something inside my leg, like a little larger than a BB, just under the skin. And once a month after I'd do these camping trips, I'd come back and I would notice that it was red and irritated looking. After my last camping trip there, where I saw the Bigfoot, and I never camped there again at night, I woke up and it was, my thigh was red and it healed up. And then there was nothing in there. The BB little thing was gone. And what was left was this scoop mark scar with a round hole next to it. Almost looks like a hypodermic hole or a hypodermic, but that's been there since 1993. Still there. Like that picture I sent you, I took the other day.
I mean, didn't that freak you out that every time then you would go out camping, that it would get irritated?
Yeah. Yeah. And I didn't know anything about implants or, you know, I didn't know what to think, really.
Right. Yeah. It's not like you were like, oh, I know what this is. This is some Whitley Strieber stuff. I got to get the heck out of here. Right. Like,
You
weren't trying to, you didn't have anything to compare it to.
Yeah, there wasn't any Google or...
Right.
And probably Whitley, his book may have been out at that time, but I wasn't familiar with it yet. But yeah, I hope they're not taking me. Since I've moved to this new house, I haven't had a decent night's sleep. I can't remember when. I always wake up. At the latest, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, 3:30 at the latest. And no matter what time I go to bed, a lot of times the UFO will be out there at that time. Like they'll be out there at dusk, and they'll be there for about an hour, hovering and moving around the area, and then they'll fly off. And then sometimes when I get up at 3 or 3:30, I look out there, and if it's clear, they'll be there. I've seen. As the crow flies, there's probably about 20 miles of forest, and then in another 5 or 10 military base, and it's where they stored. It was the last storage hold for all the chemical weapons in the United States. And I'll see helicopters fly from that direction and come out and check out this UFO when it's flying, when it's hovering. They'll fly around it, below it, and kind of far away from it, but still like in an arc around it, like they're checking it out from a distance. There'll be usually two or three of them that'll do this over a period of a few minutes. A really large helicopter, like one of those big military, the big ones. These others are probably military too, but this was one of the large ones. And it flew closer than I'd ever seen any helicopter fly to this craft. And it shot out a beam of light hit that chopper, and the chopper fell for about a second and a half, 2 seconds before it could regain its stability, and it got the hell out of there.
Oh, those poor guys had their brown pants moment after that. They're like, okay,
you know it.
Yeah, that's not good. If you're in one of those kinds of aircraft, especially, that is not good. So,
yeah,
Glenn, if we're going. And I don't know a whole lot about CE5, but I know enough just on the periphery. If we're going full bore CE5, I believe that you're supposed to be able to essentially telepathically, much like they can sense when you're trying to take pictures or video of it. You're right. You're seeing they're like scooting away and all this stuff. I've heard that before, by the way. But aren't you supposed to be able to communicate telepathically? And have you ever thought about going out and maybe you don't want to know, I don't blame you, but going out and saying, okay, if you're taking me, if you're active with me now, like I think they call it power ups, right? Or powering up to where at least.
I haven't really looked into it. I just exist.
Yeah, I think that the folks in Trout Lake, Washington over at eSETI do that. I think they, you know, get a bunch of people out there and they've got this certain intentions that they're trying to put out there. And then they call it power ups and the ships will kind of get, you know, brighter or dim. And that's kind of, you know, one for yes, two for no kind of a thing, I guess, essentially. It's another form of that. But on a whole nother scale, I got to tell you, if that's really going down, I've always wanted to get out to eSETI. You'd probably be pretty fascinated by that place. I can send you some links on that one. I've actually talked to a couple people that have gone out to eSETI. And actually, Clyde Lewis of Ground Zero finally saw Bigfoot, and it was out of eSETI. He was out there for UFO stuff, and it's been known that there's all kinds of activity, much like your area. And he finally saw Bigfoot there. But anyhow, tangent, sorry. So yeah, I was just wondering if, again, like I mentioned, I don't even know if you would want to go down that road, because that might be opening up more windows and doors. And you've already it sounds like you've got plenty that are cracked open. But I just wonder if you try to communicate with them, if they'd let you know, like, no, Glenn, we're leaving you alone. Like, you're good. Or, you know, if they would, I don't know where I was going with that, but yeah.
Recently, like, this has been happening. They've been out here for 3 years, I guess. And yeah, I'll have a telepathic thought, you know, and like I'll say hello to them sometimes, and they'll move around, like they'll acknowledge me. Sometimes I have this giant spotlight. Sometimes I'll spotlight them or hit them with a laser pointer, and they'll move, you know, and change colors. And so I know they're aware of me. I know because I can, like I said, I can look out there and go in my head, just be like, hello, how you doing? And they'll like flash. So, but I, like I said, I haven't had a good night's sleep and so long, and just recently, like in the last week, I've been like messing with me. So I wake up and I'm like, why is my arm sore here? Why is there a bruise here? You know, it is probably the day before I ran into something, but it's made me a little paranoid just in the last couple of weeks about like, I really hope they're not taking me anymore. I don't think they are, because every time I would go into the experience wanting to experience them, I would, and it would be, and more than once they, you know, from the cave, I would be out into space and shown different things about space, different things about time. You know, they showed me different. And this was back in the 90s. I mean, you tell somebody this now, they're like, well, of course. But back in the early 90s, you know, they told me stuff. We're all just energy that is connected like a giant spider web. Everything in the universe is this energy. We're all the same. We're all connected. They would show me how, like, the nature of space. Like, at one time, as we were whizzing by these planets, I could hear their rotation making a harmonic, a sound. Each one had resonated at a different harmonic pitch. And they're like, yeah, that's the music of the spheres. That's what your whole musical system is based on. Then, you know, years later, I'm trying to research that, and they're like, no, there's no sound in space. It's a vacuum. And then just a couple of years ago, maybe with the Voyager, they discovered, oh, the planets are vibrating and putting off frequencies that are sound, and you can actually go on YouTube and hear recordings of it. So that was kind of cool to find out, you know, something I'm shown back then, like, and thinking, well, how can this be true? Because everything I've read so far said that's not. And then recently it'd be shown true. And I'm like, okay, so that kind of validates a lot of the other ad and things they showed me, like the nature of time, how it's not linear. It's more like a spiral. And it's not just like a spiral. It's like a spiral in a funnel. So the more time goes, the shorter the circle gets and the faster it turns. And the fact, like, we're all speed, they show me how time is speeding up into this, whatever's going to happen next. Just different things like that recently has been proven through physics and the mechanics and that type of thing.
Well, I can hear that you've got a dog. Does the dog ever react to anything?
Actually, I think this house is haunted. We both do. The lady that used to live here died from cancer. And 50 feet from my house is a Native American burial ground and an ancient rock shelter habitation site that I discovered, excavated with the University of Kentucky and the state archaeologist. Pretty in it. Rewrote the history books of Native Americans in Kentucky. They didn't think anybody lived here permanently 10,000 years ago. And we dated this to 12,000 years. So it's a burial ground that was desecrated. People dug up the bones and stole them and stole artifacts and sold them on eBay. I don't know. So,
jeez, if that's not a recipe for some, I mean, that's horrible, right?
It is.
What people do to other people and to desecrate graves. If that's not a recipe for some serious, you know what, to go down in and around that place, I don't know what is.
Yeah. It's, I could hit it with a rock from here and then by a national forest, Daniel Boone National Forest, but there's little family graveyards all around. Like, there's another one about 200 yards from me down the hill. Weird stuff happens in this house. And we call her Rosie, the ghost. Because, I mean, I'll be sitting here and it's quiet here. I mean, I'm out in the middle of nowhere on a dead-end road. Totally quiet. And I'll hear what sounds like a whole bookshelf of books being knocked over. And I'll go look and nope, everything's fine. Or I'll hear what sounds like somebody falling down the stairs. And I'll go look and there's nothing. Lots and lots and lots of falling and sounds. I just don't know where they're coming from. So it's so common that I just pretty much ignore it now.
And do you think that that's separate from all of your ET activity? And, you know, I mean, some people lump Bigfoot in there. I mean, do you think all of these things are separate occurrences?
I think the ghost stuff, but then I don't know, because like those pictures I sent you of that, what I think may be a portal in the forest.
Yeah, that's a perfect segue. That's where I was going next. Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah. That's right. Below my house, you go through the forest, and then there's a really big creek, and then you go up another mountain. And in that valley there's old silver mines, lots of caves, old coal mines, and the area where that UFO hovers constantly, you know, every clear night it's hovering over the same area. Well, the picture was taken in the woods below that, and it wasn't there when the picture was taken. Like, it was just woods. And then when it's like, oh, what is that? You know, and then zoomed in on it and for that other picture, but you couldn't see it with the naked eye. I've showed it to people and they say, well, I see a little girl in some kind of white outfit stepping in. Or I see a big face in the back looking, you know, and I don't know if that's pareidolia or just I'm not trying to see anything in it myself.
Oh, actually, you know what? Now that you brought that up, I see the face that they're talking about. But yeah, that stuff's really tough, right? Especially when you've got grays and blacks, and then you've got these, of course, vertical lines in the trees. It can play tricks on your mind. I'm not saying that's not what it is, yeah, or that's not there, but it is. It's really easy to see that now that you say the face.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and somebody said smaller, a little white figure and like old looking outfit, whatever the white parts are of it. I don't know. I'm not looking. Like I said, I wasn't trying to really study it that close. I just was trying to ask people, what do you think this is?
And Glenn, some of these things that you sent me, are these shareable? Some of these images and things that you sent me, I always have to ask so that people, you know, because they're yelling at me, like, ask him if we can see this stuff.
Yeah, you can share any of that you want.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Okay, so why, because when we start to talk about various subjects all in one, right, especially things come up like blood type, or later on in a talk, I'll find out that someone was born with a call, right? They're a call bearer. Sometimes family history can play into it. Do you have any idea, you know, why you?
Well, I don't have a rare blood type. I'm A positive. I was adopted, so I have very limited knowledge. I know my birth mother came here from Albania, and I know my birth father was an engineer. She was a musician and an artist. That's about all I know about my family history. I don't know. I don't know why me. I do have, like, I have memory of, like, three past lives. Like, I have memory of two past lives, and I've been told by the psychic that I just accidentally ran into at a gig and shook her hand, and she grabbed it and told me I was a healer in many past lives. So I don't know if it has something to do with my spiritual journey, you know, many lifetimes, or I just don't know.
Well, the healer aspect is kind of interesting because you're very drawn to things like shamanism, right? I mean, that's kind of interesting. What are the two past lives that you can recall?
One of them was, first, the healer part is interesting because I've always had a kind of a gift of diagnosis. Like, I don't know, for some reason, somebody can tell me how they're feeling, what's going on with them, and I can tell them usually what's wrong with them. Or at least what's not wrong with them. Also, as far as the shamanism, like when I lived in a more urban setting, people were drawn to wherever I was. It wasn't unusual to stop by my house and there would be like 40 people there. And it wasn't like, hey, there's a party at Glenn's. It's just like 40 people just were randomly drawn there and stopped in. So the first one is, I remember being some kind of a scientist working with robotics during World War II. And I was in a Nazi-occupied country. I don't know which country. But how it came about, I had dreams, reoccurring dreams. And each time, more and more of the dream, the story would be revealed each time I had the dream. So this is what I came up with after a series of these dreams, which then stopped. So I was a scientist working on robotics. I was at some kind of a institute, university, and basically I was the only person working there, and it was not like a forced labor type situation. They just kind of let me continue working on what I was working on. I couldn't leave. But the guy in charge, we became friendly and we played chess and talk and stuff. So there came a point in this dream where he told me, you know, the Allies are coming. I'm out of here. You're free. Go and do whatever, you know. And I remember running escaping from that place, and I remember exactly what the landscape looked like. And years later, watching some documentaries, I saw some exact kind of landscape. I was like, okay, yeah, I know where that. So that was the first one, being a prisoner scientist, I guess. The second one was actually in the same county where I live now, but it seems like from the dreams, it would be the 1920s or possibly early 30s, because of I was a black man. I was accused of a crime I didn't commit. My friend, who turns out to be the guy who owns the farm where the cave is, but this is in another lifetime, but it's the same guy. So he takes me and he hides me in his truck, one of those old 20s trucks, me from this house out to that farm to hide me, the farm where the cave is. But the posse, the clan, whoever it was, caught up with me and hung me there. Growing up, I would try on the way from the city to my grandmother's, we would come through this county and we would drive by this one road. And I always would be like, where does that road go? And then as an adult, I went and drove up that road years and years later and actually found the house where he took me from and put me in the truck. It was still there.
Mm.
So those are the two past lives that I remember.
Well, Glenn, was there anything in closing that you wanted to make sure that you shared or anything that I should have asked you about?
You had mentioned missing time. I did have a missing time experience, if you want to hear that.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. I was on the road with one of my bands, and it was 1984. And we were doing a show like in Indiana somewhere. We had to drive basically all night to get to the next show. And we had a bus, and we had our equipment truck, and we would take turns driving different vehicles. So it was me and the bass player's time to drive the truck. So him and I are driving the truck, middle of the night, through cornfields in Indiana, nothing but cornfields. And it's a little two-lane highway. We're driving along listening to music. And the next thing you know, we wake up on the side of the road. The truck is running. The music is off. I'm no longer in the driver's seat. I'm in the passenger seat, and Ben's in the driver's seat. And we both come to at the same time and look at each other like, what are we doing here? How did we get here? What are we doing? It's been 2 hours. We're 2 hours behind. How did this happen? We got to get to the next gig. Couldn't figure it out. We just kind of like, well, I don't know, maybe we had to pull over and rest because we were tired. But no, we just finished a gig and full of adrenaline. After a gig, I mean, it takes 3 hours before you can even think about sleep. So that was the missing time incident. And it actually kept us, I believe, from getting into a bad traffic accident.
Really?
Yeah. Because when we arrived at the next city where we were going to play, 2 hours late, rush hour was over. But right as we're about to get off this highway onto the exit, the brakes went out on the truck. So the exit, no brakes. He's yanking on the emergency brake, trying to stop us. Luckily, the light at the end of the ramp was green, so I went through that light and made the left. There was a gas station right there. I made a right into the parking lot, and he's still trying to slow, so we're kind of slowing down, and I make the left behind the station there, and we just smashed right into that dumpster. And I think if it had been rush hour and the brakes had been out like that, it could have been really, really bad, but luckily the road was clear and nobody was hurt.
Yeah, that's odd timing, to say the least. Very fortuitous. Oh, Glenn, were you sharing your your past experiences with bandmates? Did they know your history?
No, I didn't share anything until maybe a couple of years ago. Is when I really got comfortable. And I'm older now, and I've got my life set up where, you know, I'm retired. I don't have, of course, I still have a studio and I make music and stuff, but I got my life set up where I don't have to do anything that I don't want to, don't have to see anybody that I don't want to. So, which is important for me, because after 38 years of being on stage and always in the public and always in the crowd and always in the noise, this, you know, it's just, it's a nice respite for me. So I'm at the point in my life now where I only really communicate with people that I want to. And I'm like, well, you know, they always know, always blunt and speak my mind. And now I'm just at the point where I just really don't care anymore. I'm just going to tell you what I believe and how I feel. And
amen to that. And now, Glenn, I don't know if you feel like, you know, it's up to you if you wanted to name drop, but this is more just my own curiosity. You know, what was one of your favorite concerts or gigs that you've ever played over those 30 years?
I'll tell you in a second. I was going to add to what you had just said about speaking your mind. As Bobo told me, he was like, let your freak fly.
Yeah, dude, you got to let that freak flag fly really, really high. Yeah, I've certainly hit that point. And now everybody at my normal job knows what I do. And I'm like, yeah, I do that. They're like, you're really into that? Yep.
Well, man, I've had amazing gigs and met so many, you know, I lived in Hollywood and I met so many cool people and famous people and heroes and got to work with a bunch of them. There's so many and so many crazy, like that's another thing. These experiences kind of opened me up to the synchronicity of things, how when you're presented with an opportunity or a path or something that may be a little scary, if you just have faith and leap in, take that chance, it'll usually work out for you. And that kind of was what happened, the synchronicities all through my career. But I have to say my favorite gig, and it was just because it was in my hometown of Lexington at the Coliseum there, Rupp Arena. It's like 40,000 people, and I did a gig with Diana Ross there, played with her, and then it ended up on the front page of my hometown newspaper, and hearing 40,000 people scream, that was amazing.
Yeah, I bet it is. I like you said, after any gig, it's like 3-4 hours later, you're like, man, maybe I can go to sleep. I can only imagine the adrenaline of something like that.
Yeah, it's the best.
Well, huge congrats on that stuff as well, Glenn. I mean, you sound like a very, very talented human being.
Well, thank you. It's what I really put all my heart and soul into my whole life. I just knew from a young age that's what I wanted to do, and that it was going to work out for me if I worked hard at it. I know you're kind of interested in Dog Man. There was a killing close by me. I don't know if you've heard about it or not.
What's the name of the, does it usually go by the location, or what's the name of the incident? Is it popular?
Well, I don't, maybe it doesn't have a name. Yeah, I don't guess it really has a name.
Because, you know, a couple of them have monikers and stuff.
Right, yeah. Yeah, this was in the county that's next to me, which I'm right on the border pretty much. It's half about 20 miles from here, I guess. And I think it was, there was a few years back, Vietnam vet who lived out in the middle of the woods, excellent hunter. The kind of hunter that if he was going to shoot 3 squirrels, he would take 3 slugs, you know, like going to shoot 2 deer, 2 bullets, you know, he never missed. He had an experience out there where he's come up on his property and he shot at it and he hit it in the chest and it ran off. And then he went to the neighbor's house and told the neighbor and his son what had happened and said he was going to go back there, but they offered to let him stay with them. But he said he was going to go back home and he just wanted somebody to know, you know, that that's what had happened. So later in the evening, they get a phone call from the guy, and the guy is screaming over the phone. You can hear his door getting smashed in, and then you can hear him shooting his gun. Then that was it. So he called the sheriff, and he went out there, and by the time he got there, the sheriff was already there. And besides the sheriff being there, there were some guys there in SUVs and suits. He was trying to ask his friend, the sheriff, what had happened. The government guys were trying to kind of squash their conversation, but he managed to tell him that all they found was his foot, like his ankle and foot. Was all that they found. Lots and lots of blood. The door had been smashed in. He said they were standing around there talking, and his son looked down and saw a footprint from the creature in the dust, and he kind of nudged his dad, and his dad looked down and saw it. And the government guys saw what they were, took his foot and cleared it out. Told him it was a bear attack and that they'd have to leave. So he asked his friend, the sheriff, he's like, look, you know, you need to tell me what's going on. And the sheriff said, I promise after I leave here, I'll come by and tell you, you know, what's going on. So a few days later, when he got in touch with him, and then the sheriff told him what had happened. Yeah, that's the only dogman story I've ever heard around here, but it's pretty crazy.
They're always such angry MFers, you know? They're really, that's just not, talk about being 3 feet from one of those things. It's like, my goodness gracious. So is there actually a paper trail as far as this gentleman dying? I mean, not in that way. Obviously, they're not going to write that in a paper. But is there a paper trail of this man being here and then, you know, now he's not?
There would have to be. I haven't researched into it. But there would have to be, because according to this guy and his son, he was a Vietnam vet. Just kind of, you know, lived out, a survivalist kind of guy, lived out in the woods, shot and hunted for what he ate and that kind of thing. But they would have to be some, you know, military records, tax records, property records, something, obituary. I don't know the guy's name, you know,
right.
But I'm sure that could be found out if, you know, if it was.
Yeah, I'd like to look into that. I mean, we're in contact now because I want to keep up with what you have going on, obviously, but that would be kind of cool to look into that dogman story.
I can share with you where I heard the story, and maybe you can find something out from there.
Okay.
I know the guy has passed away now that shared the story, but not the guy and his son that actually were
right
there, but they told this other guy and he passed away.
Right.
But they're still around, yeah.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah, but I do want to be kept up to date with what's going on with you. Yeah. I wish I lived close. Not that I'm always like inviting myself to people's properties, but man, I miss being in Ohio because I was in driving distance to a lot of folks that I was talking to, you know.
Yeah. Well, you're welcome here anytime.
Oh, thanks.
I've invited a couple other people that I know that are interested in this type of thing too. Come up. So I think in the next couple of weeks, I think we're going to have a cave camp. Cross my fingers. I'll be okay.
Right.
Watch in the backyard. So.
Oh man, let me know how that goes. We might need a part two, right? Like.
Yeah, I will for sure. I am being a musician, and I've got this studio, and people have been telling me for years, I have people that are in the movie industry and the TV industry, they're like, man, you should write a book. This would make such a great TV show.
They're right.
And they were just talking about experiences in the music business, not anything else.
Oh, yeah, that
just
too.
Just like all my interesting stories, road stories and stuff.
Well, now you have two books to write.
Right. But I started writing it, and I was like, you know, it'd be easier just to do a podcast and invite my musician friends to come on, tell some road stories, play a little music, you know, slip in a, have you ever had anything paranormal? You know?
Heck yeah. Well, so, I mean, I listen to Howard Stern a lot, and he had on, oh my God, of course I'm going to forget his name. The Foo Fighters lead singer. What the hell is his name?
Dave Grohl.
Yeah, Dave. Goodness me. Anyway, he just dropped a bomb on, because Howard hates the paranormal. He just makes fun of it. He thinks it's all bullshit. And anyway, Dave started talking about this haunted house that he lived in, you know, and Howard's like, what? You're, you know, no way, dude. And he's like, I swear to God, if you're doing this camp out, I don't know. I mean, considering all the things that go down, it sounds like we might be doing a part two. So maybe that's a good thing, because then we can start to weave in some of the other stuff that you didn't share today, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, I've got three of my new buddies, musicians in Northern, do a podcast called the Kentucky X-Files. So they're going to come down and we're going to make some music and record some stuff. And got another buddy from North Carolina, Brian. He does a podcast called Sasquatch Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, I know. And, I'm aware of him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've really never cool spoken guy. To him, but yeah, that's awesome. Oh, there's definitely going to be some stuff going down. This is going to be great. Yes. And you guys are obviously going to be recording some stuff as far as, you know, trying to grab audio if anything's out there and video. So, yeah.
And Brian, he got a record deal when he was like 16. Great voice, country music singer. But yeah, so there'll be music and probably a few episodes of podcast and hopefully some great UFO video and who knows what else.
Well, yeah, and obviously those two different podcasts are going to have first dibs. Totally understand, because they're going to be there for it. But yeah, anytime you want to come back on, I would love to have you back.
Yeah, I would love that. It's been a pleasure talking to you, Shannon.
So, well, thanks, Glenn. And hey, like I said, we're in touch, so utilize that, you know, and I certainly will for you if I have any ideas I need to bounce off you, because, I mean, after just talking to you and Shanna is the other lady I just spoke to, I'm like, man, there's a lot of tie-ins here that I'm not smart enough to put together. You know, we're all trying, but there's only so much we can do.
But yeah, I would love to talk again. And like I said, you have an open invitation to come experience.
Thank you.
Paranormal anytime.
I appreciate that. I really honestly do. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, man. Well, have a good day out there.
All right, Shannon. It's great talking to you.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bark. The Buddha says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the meaning. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. reincarnation. That after your funeral, you know, you will suddenly become somebody different, living somewhere else. They will say reincarnation means this, that if you sitting here now are really convinced that you're the same person who walked in at the door half an hour ago, you're being reincarnated. If you are liberated, you understand that you're not. The past doesn't exist. The future doesn't exist. There is only the present. That's the only real you that there is. The Zen master Dogen put it in this way. He said, spring does not become the summer. First there is summer, and then there is spring.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.